Welcome back to the Word for Life radio ministry. In January, the past couple of years, we focused on missions. For this month, we'd like some feedback, and we're calling it Letter Month. Basically, we'd like to hear from you folks, our listeners, and kind of give us an idea of how the broadcasts are helping you, maybe motivating or encouraging you. Many times we tell our stories, and we'd love to hear your stories. If you'd be so kind, maybe sometime during this month, if you would go to www.thewordforlife.org, click on the Contact Us link, and drop us a note. Now, feel free to include any topics that you'd like for us to address in the future. If you have any question about a particular topic, odds are that other listeners do also. So please take a minute and drop us a note. We'd really appreciate it. And Jerry Fry is again in the studio with me this morning, helping us to understand that, yes, the Word of God does give the answers to life. And Jerry, we're glad you're back with us. As I was sharing with our listening audience a couple of days ago, you're going to be sharing a presentation entitled Denying the Creator, where folks profess themselves to be wise but actually make themselves to be fools. That'll be here at Brookside Baptist Church Tuesday night, April the 8th, beginning at 7. And we definitely want you folks to write that down in your calendar, plan to be with us. Jerry, just kind of give us maybe another little nugget that will kind of whet the appetite, if you will.
Thank you, Greg. In case you didn't have a chance to hear the earlier one, we're basing this talk on Romans 1:18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like the corruptible man, and birds, and four-footed animals, and creeping things. And so the point here is the last few years, as we've been presenting to the Creation Society, we talk about this idea that God has said you can see certain things about his eternal power and the Godhead itself. You can see various attributes of God in the creation.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of that is sometimes referred to as general revelation, similar to the Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. And there's no place where their song is not heard.
Right.
The idea here is that you can look in creation and know that there is a God. And so God says here that he's going to hold us accountable to it. And when we deny that truth, when we suppress that truth in unrighteousness, what happens is our futile hearts become darkened.
Right.
We get turned over to a depraved mind. And so I'll give you an example here of another thing from nature. Last time we talked about the ear and the miracle of the ear and what evolutionists have to say about where that came from.
Sure, right.
Today we'll talk about bird navigation and the idea of migrating birds.
Mm-hmm.
Where did this come from? Well, interestingly enough, birds have a whole series of special tools, which won't surprise anybody who believes in God and creation.
Right.
But let me describe some of them for you. First off, birds see light in polarized. It's like they have a pair of sunglasses on all the time.
Hmm.
And the important point about that is they can tell what direction the sun is in by the polarization. What polarization does is it's like going through two picket fences in a row, and you can get through the first one, but the second one your beam hits.
Okay.
And so that would create the chromatic distortion.
Mm-hmm.
And sunglasses take that out. Well, the bird's eyes can do it. He can do it simply by turning his head.
Hmm.
So by turning his head, he can tell the attitude and direction of the sun and basically where he's at. In their right eye, and only the right eye, migratory birds have a special structure that holds a very peculiar molecule. And on one end, it's essentially a hexane or a fullerene kind of structure. That means a six-sided molecule. And it's connected to a carotenoid, which is, interestingly enough, a structure that causes leaves in the fall to turn orange.
Really?
But the point of this molecule is that it's polarized. That means that one end will hold a charge.
Oh, okay.
And so basically, the bird can tell by where the charge is,
yeah,
where they are in relation to the Earth's magnetic field.
Oh, my goodness.
So this means that the bird basically has their own kind of GPS based on not our satellites, but on the Earth's magnetic field. Well, if you start to think about that, that means somewhere in the bird's brain, it must not be quite the bird brain we think it is.
Yeah, I guess not.
God had to imprint, essentially, the magnetic map of the Earth.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
Because the information has to be compared to something to provide the context about where it's at. So you start to think about this. There are birds that migrate at night, and it turns out that they have star maps. There are birds that migrate during the day. They have sun maps.
Mm.
There's some that migrate over areas that have certain things that are in bloom certain times of the year, and we call those olfactory maps.
Okay.
That's smell maps.
Sure.
And then they have these magnetic maps, etc. So it turns out that what's going on in a bird's brain for migratory navigation is actually incredibly complex.
I guess so.
And part of a very hard-to-imagine set of information that's in the bird's brain for it to be compared against all of these things. Because if you think about it, the birds don't get a chance to study astronomy. How in the world do they know how to read the map?
There is no bird school, is there?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you have this idea that birds have been ingrained with this information. And then there are some where, in particular, like monarch butterflies, where the generation that migrates south is not the same generation that migrates north. So that means that when they're going to migrate south again, these aren't the same ones. It's not like they learn, right? They have to know.
Okay. It's not repetitive pattern then.
Not at all. And it's not like they have schools to teach their young, right?
Mm-hmm.
This has to be a built-in phenomenon. Then you've got fish that use the same kind of thing, only it's all chemical. And so they can tell precisely the chemical makeup of the water that they were born in. And so salmons will go up which stream. And so the point is these incredible abilities are built into so much of God's creation that it just seems hard to imagine. Now, the evolutionists say that this all developed quite by accident and in response to hunger or in response to a change in climate or some other cataclysm or fleeing predators. I mean, they've got a whole wide range of things that, you know, you might do, like a forest fire, you know, I would leave.
Right.
Would that actually start migration? So I just find it very interesting that they presuppose that all of this information that's necessary to be processed against the unique abilities or tools that these animals have.
Right.
Where did that come from? Where did that come from? And that's ultimately one of the big issues between creationists and evolution is where did the information come from?
Right. You know, it's like you said at the beginning of the broadcast, Romans chapter 1 says that these invisible things from the creation of the world are clearly seen, understood by the things that are made. And we're talking about things that God made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Now, as you go over to Romans chapter 2, it's talking about, in verse 14, how the Gentiles don't know the law, but they have the law of God in their own hearts. And notice verse 15, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts, the meanwhile, accusing or else excusing one another. Now, if they're without excuse, how can their consciences excuse one another? But see, that's what they have to do. They're without excuse standing in front of God. But boy, their consciences are constantly trying to make excuses for why they do what they do. But God has simply said, but I put a law in your heart, the difference between right and wrong, and you know it. And you're making all kinds of excuses, but I've given it to you even when you don't know the Old Testament law. It is just amazing to me that folks will do anything and say anything just to try to get them to the point that they won't have to stand before God. And I think when we consider the fact that God has said there will come a day that all the dead, small and great, will stand before God. And you know, the sad thing is the fact that everybody thinks when they stand before the God, they'll talk to God and tell God why this and God ought to do this. But the Bible says their mouths will be stopped. And God's going to say, excuse me, but I'm the one talking. You have nothing to say here. I'm God. You're not. You're done, you know. But that's the message, Jerry, that we're trying to get out, isn't it?
It is. Our children are being assaulted constantly by this idea of naturalism.
Yes.
The idea that God is excluded from any of these processes. You're not allowed to resort to the weak explanation of God did it. So you have to make up whatever just-so story you need to describe what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially how this is done. They look at the forms. It's called morphology. They look at the forms that they see today in living creatures, and they look at the forms they can find in the fossil record, and they simply create narratives that describe how one could have possibly gotten to another.
Doesn't that take a lot of faith?
It does. It takes an enormous amount of faith. And when you read their work, they'll say maybe, perhaps, could be,
exactly,
you know,
right,
likely.
We think.
Yeah, we think.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to the end of the story, when you get to any of the details, it's all that, you know, mushy language. But when you get to the end of the story, evolution is a fact.
Oh, it's settled in their minds,
right,
yes.
Right, right, right. And creation is, in fact, a religion,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you get this idea that somehow creationists aren't scientific, a point that Bill Nye tried to make often in the debate with Ken Ham.
Right.
And, of course, that's simply not true.
Exactly. And parents, you're listening to us this morning, and many times the things that you're hearing from your kids as they come home from school, they have to have some answers. And that's where Answers in Genesis is such a fantastic resource on the internet, and Creation Museum down in Kentucky, and so many things that creation ministries are involved in, is giving your children answers. Because it's vitally important. If they don't think the Bible has answers, even without you knowing it, they will reject the Bible, thinking, well, that's what we believe on Sunday, but Monday through Saturday, then we'll go by the scientific research that we're studying, and they'll walk away from God and the Bible and everything that you've tried to teach them simply because we didn't give them biblical answers. In fact, Ken Ham has written a book along that line, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. There are four answers books from Answers in Genesis that will describe how you might answer various challenges to the idea that God created.
And these are resources parents should and can have. And the one that just really got my attention, and we've run out of time, was the one entitled Already Gone. You know, how that so many young people walked away from God, church, Bible, all that kind of stuff, and we thought it was because of the secular colleges they went to. But lo and behold, the research that Ken was able to do with a very reputable research assistant, those two men put together research that indicated to us a very small percentage lost their faith in college. Most of them lost it in junior high and senior high.
That's right. And the single largest issue was the age of the earth. And if you believe in long ages, it allows children to deny Genesis. And once you deny Genesis, you're going to have a hard time holding up the rest of the theology, since everything is based on some doctrine in the first 11 chapters of Genesis.
Right. Jerry, thank you so much for your insight. Join us next time. We will continue. God bless.